I'm Dr. Ryan Stanton. It's time for some ASAP Frontline today, joined by Dr. Christian Ramsey here in Lexington, Kentucky. And today we're going to focus on the new research and adjustments to stroke care, in specific for him as a neurosurgeon with the mechanical thrombectomy, and how that needs to be considered as part of your stroke care process in your hospital. We'll talk about that, and then we'll also talk about how we need to make sure that we have the programs set up to make sure this is an option for you guys, and especially community hospitals that we're dealing with, how they're going to get these people where they need to be, knowing what's available, knowing who may be a candidate, and thus making sure you give the patient the proper proper care and options that they may have when they have their stroke. So, Christian, thanks for joining me once again.
Thanks, Ryan.
All right, so let's start off and say, where were we and what, give us the basis. Where did the new recommendations come from? Because you were part of that process.
Yeah, so basically since probably around 2007 or so, a group of interventionalists have been very aggressive in trying to revascularize and open cranial vessels in patients with stroke. That began with the PROACT trial, where we tried to give intra-arterial TPA, and then that was followed up by a series of studies using, for example, the MERCY device. The multi-MERCY registry showed that these blood vessels in the head can be safely opened. And what happened is people basically used that data, and we did not do it in a structured format. And through the course of time, because of insurance pressures or maybe just regional referrals or what have you, this culminated with an article called the IMS3 that was published in the New England Journal a couple of years back that basically showed that all of this endovascular therapy was not superior to standard of care TPA. Because of the players and the stakeholders, there was a major drive just this last year to complete multiple trials investigating the new devices that we have, those called stentrievers. These are essentially endovascular devices. They look like a stent on a stick. And they were done in highly controlled trials, and multiple trials came out that showed that there was benefit to opening large vessel occlusive strokes. So these are not lacunar infarcts. These are not carotid artery occlusions. These are M1 carotid terminus large vessel occlusive strokes in patients that really had no other option other than TPA. And what the culmination of that literature showed that in patients who get TPA, the addition of mechanical thrombectomy in patients with large vessel stroke, it was beneficial and radically so.
Well, that's one of the large differences. Before, it seemed like when stroke patients came in the emergency room, you were either going down the TPA pathway or the mechanical thrombectomy or intervention pathway, and that's not the case anymore, correct?
That's right. I mean, I think that if you look back at the history of stroke care, you know, the first push was just trying to get people to use TPA based on certain studies, depending on, you know, whether they were get with the guidelines hospitals or not. I mean, less than 1% of patients who were candidates were getting TPA for a while. I think that there's been an adoption of that, and so we've gotten that number up. But from my experience as a trainee and also as an attending in academic and non-academics, you really get the vibe that people come in, either they're TPA candidates or not, and then if they're not a TPA candidate, we just kind of stop, and we just say there's nothing we can do. And I think that the patients who get the TPA, they kind of get the TPA, and they get admitted to the ICU, and they kind of stop. You know, they may get some blood pressure management or something, but really now what we're trying to distill out is what in addition can we do for these patients that are not doing well, and this is what the data showed. So,
and that's, and you know, being somebody who sent patients here for you guys to have the treatments done and seeing some of the improvements in those people that are outside the TPA window, because we all know that really a pretty small percentage of the patients actually make it safely within the TPA window or have some sort of contraindication to TPA. This window buys us more time to have something to do, and actually, if they qualify based on the location of the infarct, they may have more options available. What's the timing based on this research and recommendations now for the mechanical thrombectomy?
Okay, so So there's a this is there's a difference between what is published and what is functionally used in practice. And I think that everybody knows that TPA probably should be given out to at least 4.5 hours now in appropriate patients. And then the addition of mechanical thrombectomy, it's FDA indicated, I want to say between 6, even up to 8 hours after presentation. But the real key is everybody's cerebral hemodynamics is different. And whether or not patients are candidates for mechanical embolectomy, we base a lot of that on either a non-contrasted head scan and their infarction volume at the time of presentation. And that's different for every patient. There's something we use called an aspect score. And the other thing that we do in our institution, we actually use perfusion imaging. And so perfusion imaging basically is a contrasted CT of the head where we look at how quickly contrast gets into different areas of the brain, and then we can look at those images and determine, is brain died, is it a penumbra, or is it alive? And you can do some predictions about what would happen if you didn't do things. And so I think that as community ER docs are going to be working in different geographies with different access to different levels of care, you're going to hear a lot of different options that happen to your patients, especially if you sent them on to a tertiary care center or if you just began to have access to an endovascular person. And I think a lot of it can be nonsensical, based on the availability and where your patient is and what the risk is. And I think the take home for you guys out in the front lines is that if you're working in a center that doesn't have immediate access to endovascular coverage to give patients embolectomy in the TPA patients, and you're seeing documented large vessel occlusive stroke, like you get a CTA, for example, and you're like, there is an MCA that is blocked off, and the patient's getting TPA, that really, I would encourage you to reach out to a center that's local to you and form a relationship with people who can provide salvage care because the outcomes in these patients, we know that TPA does not revascularize clot over 9 and 10 millimeters. And when you get these, 50, 40, 60-year-old patients in, they have an MCA clot, have atrial fibrillation, which is the most common reason we see that. They may be on Coumadin. These patients are going to go to nursing homes versus our experiences that, they can go home in a day. And I've seen that. I've seen patients with NIH stroke scales of 20 go home in 2 days with no rehab because they got to us. And so I think I would encourage you to reach out. This is something that you need to form a relationship with a local team that you like if you're in a smaller hospital, and try to select for those people, those patients, and I would encourage you to do that.
Yeah, this is one of those opportunities that's good to improve the stroke care network for your entire state. With the ASEP state grades for emergency medicine or the environment emergency medicines, one of the things is EMS and distribution protocols for a state. And this is a time where you need to establish where your referral centers are, where they're going to go, what their opportunities are, because what you don't want to do, say in our case here, is potentially send somebody somewhere for a stroke, where if they went to the hospital 2 miles down the road or 3 miles down the road, they could have gotten this type of therapy, which could have been life-changing for them.
Well, and I'll interrupt you there. I think that right now, even in our state, in Kentucky, for example, we're revamping the triage protocols for stroke. And those are going to be reflective of the new AHA guidelines and this new data. And one of the pitfalls, I think, is that nobody really understands how to get these patients to the right place at the right time. I don't think we have enough data. We have data based on STEMIs. But STEMIs are different because there's more interventional cardiologists. And I think that, there's comprehensive stroke center accreditation, obviously, which should guarantee 24/7 endovascular coverage. But in my experience working in all different types of centers, what I would say is that what you really want to find is find a place that is committed to providing this care. Because there are definitely going to be centers out there that have a lot of people who can perform this, but maybe this isn't their passion to try to do it. And it takes a really You have to have a very aggressive team that really wants to be good at this, to do it the right way, like we did in the Swift trial. And our goals are trying to get people, 60 and 90 minutes, from their presentation off through our ER revascularized. And depending on transfer and how long, what the weather's like with helicopters and whether or not your CTA can get done or perfusion imaging, I would encourage you to try to form that relationship with a set of people that you know that, like, when you call them, they're going to be like, we will meet them in the cath lab. It's going to be done. And they're not going to sit in a stretcher in the emergency room and wait for a neurologist to see them to then call and activate that system. Because by the time that those patients become distilled down to the who may be a very capable interventionalist, they may have missed a window. Because they might be 9 hours in, and that patient might be like, "Well, we got them sent up here, but we don't want to do that. That's off label, or we don't do perfusion imaging, for example. So therefore, I think that they're outside their window." Or so I think that I would be very, very cognizant of where you send these patients, and that it's not where you're necessarily, like, your hospital may have a partnership, for example, with another hospital. That they encourage you to send them to Hospital A. And I just think I would really investigate what that relationship looks like and make sure that you really are allowing this, what is relatively less than 10% of patients with a stroke, a real opportunity for that life-saving therapy.
And what I see from the emergency medicine standpoint is this almost turns into trauma type care. If you think about it, like ATLS, is don't sit on it, don't do a complete workup there to then try to send them somewhere else. Do what's necessary to stabilize the patient, to make a decision to get them where they need to be. So an example is here, as soon as a stroke patient comes in, we send them over to the CT scanner. They immediately get a non-contrasted head CT scan. In order to determine if there's a bleed or something else like that. But then we do some point of care labs with the perfusion there. They don't leave the CT suite. They actually get the perfusion.
And that's something that when we looked at our workflow, we got pushback from nephrology. And one of the things that we did is we empowered our emergency room physicians on the code strokes when they come in to make a decision as the patient is wheeling back. And in some busier ERs, you may not be able to do that. I mean, we have a pretty busy ER, but in a level one trauma center. But what I would encourage you is allow the ER doc to make that decision to go ahead and get advanced imaging. CTA is definitely recommended in these patients. And so I think that if you see a younger person with a large stroke, and I would add on that CTA of the head, because when you look at that, they may not have a bleed. You're going to give them TPA. But if your radiologist, if they nighthawk it, send it out, whatever, it may take 20 or 30 minutes to get a read back on that. You can already have given TPA. And if they call you and they say this person has an MCA occlusion, they're getting TPA, that patient, if you don't have access to endovascular care, that needs to be discussed with an interventionalist what the option is. You can't bed those people down anymore.
Yeah, that's a good point. If you don't stop now with TPA, and that's what we will do. We will order, as a physician in the CT suite, we will go ahead and order the TPA to be prepared so we can administer it as soon as they get back in the ER. And what we find is the whole process from the time they arrive to the time they're getting TPA is less than 30 minutes, typically, if we get it ready in time. And then on top of that, the whole CT with CT perfusion with CTA of the head and neck is done within 15 minutes of their arrival, and that gives us the options. And of course, they go straight to you guys to where you're reviewing them, so it's not like we have to sit there and consult you, wait for the read. You guys are doing that contemporaneously with the evaluation of the patient. And in fact, I've had calls before I've even gotten back to the emergency room about the options for the patient, or yes, we want to take this patient up. That's what I think is a great system that's set up that has everybody working in parallel instead of trying to go emergency physician, complete workup, neurology, interventional stroke care. It almost needs to all be working at the same time. And so many times with these patients, I'll be talking to you guys and the stroke and the neurology folks at the same time, basically to keep them filled in. But in terms of the community hospitals, I think it's important to get that non-contrast image because that's a huge differentiation. If they got a big head bleed, that's a different story, especially in our state where we have a lot of high blood pressure, a lot of chronic vascular disease. So we have quite a few bleeds, instead of just the embolic or thrombotic strokes. And then getting a plan together in terms of what their option is. And that's what emergency medicines need to do, is empower themselves by knowing knowing where we are with TPA and with mechanical thrombectomy or interventional stroke care, thus knowing what you're going to do next, not sitting on them, not doing too much evaluation, but what's necessary to then disposition them to the next stage of care. Because just like heart care or just like trauma care, with stroke care, time, of course, is tissue, and every second and every minute we wait is cells that are dying off. And so even if they're still within a window, if we get them earlier inside that window, their likelihood of full and complete recovery is even higher.
Yeah, and I think really, I mean, I think for the community physicians who may not have access to this care, I guess I would say that historically, you could stop with TPA administration and a non-contrasted head scan. And I think that what you're going to see, which is even a potential port of litigation, is that that is probably not going to be adequate, that you need to do a CTA of the head now. And if your hospital doesn't do that, I would encourage you to work with your radiology department, because that is something that's a very quick study that's going to very rapidly delineate which patients really are going to be helped by what we do on the interventional front. Additionally, that's time when a chopper may be coming down and an ambulance or transfer that you will be able to reach out to an interventionalist, not necessarily just the neurologist. And again, it just goes back to really, this is a select group of patients. This isn't going to be everybody, but every single emergency room doctor has probably seen a relatively young, healthy person with a massive stroke. And I would encourage you to find where is that place that you can call the person that is going to pull the blood clot out. And I think that there'll be somebody on call. Some centers don't have a place on call, but I know that a lot of centers maybe have one or two people that are always available, you know, even though they may not be on a call schedule. And I would try to find who that person is, because I think the difference is I've had absolutely a couple of patients where the emergency room doctor thought they were worried about the patient. They called me personally, even though I wasn't on call. It was like through the exchange that we have, and said, "Hey, look, I just gave TPA to somebody. I talked to your neurologist. They're coming up there." And I was like, that patient should go straight to the cath lab. And we've made really life-altering impact. And that's the reason I think we do this. And so I think I would encourage you. I think the thing that you need to do is just press ahead to that next level of care. And I think that that's something different, that is the difference, you know, that now you give the TPA, the CT's okay, you've called, they've arranged transfer to the neurology service at Hospital X. That's probably, I would encourage you to push a little harder to make sure that you understand why you're sending them to the next level of care, you know? And if the CTA is negative and you have access to that, then you probably can wait. You're probably okay. I mean, if you know they can go by ground transport or whatever, but I would encourage you to seek this out. This is a change in a paradigm. I mean, this is like the interventional cardiologist in the 1970s and 80s with ST segment versus non-ST segment MIs, you know.
And that's, you know, and it you mentioned it's a good idea. This isn't the minor headache with blurry vision, occipital vertebral distribution stroke we're talking about here. These are the ones that are going to, you're going to know as soon as you walk in, because it's going to be this is a good physical exam diagnosis. If you look at it and you go, man, this is a big MCA distribution stroke, you need to be already thinking about this, that this is an option out there. So, you know, instead of before we're thinking, you know, with TPA, you've got a lot more of the brain options in terms of vessels involved. And this one, we have a very narrow area that we're now focusing on. So the exam helps quite a bit. So recent stroke with just that little blurry vision headache, and that's not necessarily the ones we're talking about.
Well, no, and I agree with that. And I think these are patients with, you know, major hemiplegia, aphasia, neglect. They're staring off to one side in the scanner. You can't hold their head scan. And back to that, I hate to bring up medical legal issues. I have a lot of friends from medical school that are ER docs, and a lot of physicians, I think, especially emergency room physicians, get the idea that TPA doesn't work. And I think they're probably correct. For the worst strokes, it doesn't. And they've heard about, well, that guy went on and had a bleed. The reason they bled is because TPA is given to large vessel occlusive strokes. These are NIH stroke scale 20. And they have an 8 millimeter or 12 millimeter thrombus in their carotid terminus. And you give the TPA, and that is not going to revascularize with TPA alone. And those patients went on to hemorrhage. And what that did is it made, I think early on, with the nines and everything, the trials, it made a lot of emergency room doctors, I think, reticent to give tPA because they all got bit by the quote bleed, you know? And I think what you're going to see is that, you know, I think what you're going to see is more and more sophistication on the viewer and the patient base about I think you're going to see more and more sophistication with the viewer base about what wasn't done for somebody with a stroke now. And there is such a narrow window by which, and I think it's very important for you guys in order to protect yourself. People are going to be like, well, why didn't this get done? You know, and I think that it's something that we're going to see more and more pressure. And additionally, I think the hospital systems are going to put more and more pressure on you guys to transfer people to certain places or to motherships, and that you just want to make sure that wherever they're going, that they have access to that care. You know, but I think it's something that you're going to see more and more litigation revolving around people who did not get tPA or who did not get referred to an appropriate center now, and I think that's going to happen.
And I think that's an important thing, one, for discussions, you know, for your documentation. If you're not going to do something, especially tPA now, is saying why. M vast majority of times it's timing. Timing are a big con some like one we recently had that just had was being evaluated for GI bleed at the same time. So you need to document why that you considered it and why you didn't do it. If they fall inside the windows, or if they don't fall inside the windows, documenting that last known normal 12 hours ago, you know, confirmed, as opposed to she thinks she was normal, he thinks he was normal 3 hours ago, or whatever it may be, making sure that you document that medical decision making that you had, in order, if it comes back later or it's reviewed later, to say this is why the decision was made, because that's what's going to protect you on protect you in the end if it comes back to say this could have been done, but you didn't do it.
Well, and I was also going to say too, I think one of the other amendments about reflective in the new AHA guidelines is that patients with rapidly improving strokes are no longer, that's not an out on necessarily giving, and also a low stroke scale. You know, we used to say, oh, well, if people have a low stroke scale, you don't have to give them tPA. And I can't recall exactly the specific number, but but that is no longer exclusionary. And I think that's important to know that, like, though the patient's getting better, they have minor weakness in their arm. Those patients probably have non-occlusive thrombus if it's a large vessel occlusive stroke, and those are patients who would actually get better with tPA alone, you know. And there's plenty of patients that we see that get transferred up that have fluctuating neurologic symptoms. You know, they have their stroke, they're weak, they get there, they get better, but they're still deficit. Those patients need to be watched closely because they have a stuttering decline usually. And so those are all very good points that you brought up, you know, just to update yourself with the new AHA guidelines.
And basically, what we're saying here is that if you don't look at these things, research these things, you graduated from residency 10 years ago, heck, even 5 years ago,
Two
10,
years
2 years
ago.
ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago. Stroke care has advanced so quickly. It's such a moving target that basically, if you don't update your practice, you're putting yourself and your patients at risk. But especially you, with all of these options out there, you can't use, I mean, just like with the police, you know, if you're going 85 and a 55, you can't use "I didn't know" as an excuse anymore. This is something that you need to know, research, and, you know, luckily for us, you're not working in a center where you guys come down and say, hey, this is what we're doing now. And so within a week of this process, we've changed the entire process within the arrival of our stroke care. But if you're in a community center that doesn't have neurologists, I've worked in many of those where at night you're the only physician in the entire building. You know, it's going to be hard to understand, to know how these things are changing and advancing, and where you can get the care for that patient they may need. Especially if you'd mentioned it, the relationships with the hospitals. We're getting a whole lot of people working together and saying, we want you to use our chain of hospitals. Well, sometimes that's not what's best for the patient. Sometimes you need to get them to the place they need to get the best outcome for their illness. And so you, as a physician, as a provider, needs to know that sort of thing. So let's wrap up with, let's give the capsule summary here of which vessels are a candidate, the timing, and any other kind of pearls that we've mentioned already, or that these folks need to know.
I would say that number one would be large vessel occlusive stroke is different than stroke in general. And these patients usually present with aphasia, hemiplegia, neglect. Number two is that TPA alone is not enough for these patients anymore. That's the real take home, is that TPA in addition to the embolectomy is superior to TPA alone, or I guess I would say embolectomy in addition to the TPA is superior to TPA alone, and that is a standard of care now. This is like penicillin for pneumonia. This is like, this just happened. And that lastly is that when you choose to send these patients out, I would encourage every single ER doc who's driving to work today to spend 2 minutes and get on the internet or talk to the radiology department and be like, who is the doctor who does these and who wants to do them? Doesn't say they do them and doesn't do them. I mean, the person who's the go-getter in your community. And I think that if you do those three things, I think you're gonna have a lot better outcomes from the patients that you touch. So.
And so now that's, you know, summary, it's an and now, not an or. So TPA, still consider mechanical thrombectomy. Even if they're not a candidate for TPA, consider mechanical thrombectomy. So, you know, making sure you evaluate those both as you go. And now I want to, so say I'm a community physician out there. We need some help. How do we get this rolling? You know, this has really got me shaking. I'm a little bit nervous. I may not sleep tonight because I'm worried that I'm not going to be prepared the next time a stroke. Is there some way they can reach out to you guys or do something to help them get some information on how to get things going? Or maybe how do you get the folks into their hospital to say, this is the services we provide?
Yeah, I would say number one, anybody can email me at christianramseymd@gmail.com. Always happy to get an email to answer the questions to the best of my ability. I would say that if you're in a hospital that has a stroke coordinator or a stroke line service, you should talk to them. I think that radiology is becoming more of a an integral component of this if you're going to do advanced imaging at your local hospital. And I think then lastly is just getting on the internet locally and seeing where if you're a spoke hospital, so to speak, where is your hub and how do patients with strokes get treated in that hospital? Do they get transferred to the floor and get convalescent care after TPA and sent to rehab? Do they get decompressive craniectomies? Are they getting additional therapies? Are they getting embolectomies based on advanced imaging? And how interested are those physicians in driving that? You may find that the place isn't that aggressive. And if they're not doing, we see a number of strokes a year. We probably do 50 embolectomies a year. We see a stroke volume of maybe 600, 700, 800 strokes a year. And so if people are not doing embolectomies with a relative frequency that they want to be doing it, that's a question, why not, even though it may be a hub hospital. And I think that I would look at numbers and see who is committed to providing that level of care.
So, you know, and what we find a lot of community hospitals is if you talk to these stroke coordinators, outreach for these larger facilities, they're happy to have their folks come down, talk with you, host a lunch or dinner to educate you, and then establish those protocols. One of my favorite things at the smaller hospital I once worked for, which is where the stroke that you guys took care of came from, is having a sheet on the wall that from the facility that you send people to. So we'll just use the example of for STEMIs. We have three different hospitals, referral hospitals we can use. It has their sheets of what they want, how the process works, who you call, and how that mechanism takes place. And I encourage that same mechanism when it comes to stroke care. When somebody comes in the door, what are you going to do? What are you going to keep? What are you going to send? When are you going to send it? To make sure that the patient gets the best care that they can possibly get. Christian, I really appreciate your time. Again, that's christian.ramsey@gmail.com, correct?
christianramseymd@gmail.com.
Okay, christianramseymd@gmail.com. I've done that. I've made the mistake. We randomly had people sending stuff to a plastic surgeon in California who has my same name. So, you want to be careful.
And then also can reach out to Ryan and he can touch.
Yeah, RyanStantonMD@gmail.com, RyanStantonMD@gmail.com, ChristianRamseyMD@gmail.com. So it sounds like we got a pretty good theme going there. So I appreciate your time once again. Make sure you research it, get the information, and improve your practice, especially as community physicians. Hope you'll join me. This is Ryan Stanton. I'm a spokesman for the American College of Emergency Physician. You've been listening to ASEP Frontline. If you want more information, you can check it out at youreverydaymedicine@gmail.com or ryanstantonmd@gmail.com. I'm Dr. Ryan Stanton, and this has been some ASEP Frontline.